Intervju Radija Študent.
Poslušalci Radija Študent, intervju Radija Študent poslušate seveda in kot ste morda že prej slišali ali pa niste, zato vam zdaj povem, se bo intervju zgodil z pevcem retro swing benda, modernega swing benda, ki se imenuje Cherry Poppin' Daddies. Pri nas smo jih že gledali, mislim da dvakrat. Z mano je v studiju pevec Steve Perry. In z njim pa se bom pogovarjala s kabina, seveda. Verjetno pa ste že spoznali ta komad, ki se zelo veliko vrti na radio, pa tudi različni DJ-ji ga zelo radi zavrtimo, ker ga imajo ljudje radi. Imenuje se Zoot Suit Riot in je iz njihove kompilacije swing komadov, ki je band najbolj proslavila. Hello, Stu, it's nice to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
This is your third concert in Slovenia, I
That's
think.
Right, yeah, third time.
Do you remember first two?
I do.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, the first one was, we did the first Warped Tour here downtown in 1998.
Yeah, with specials.
That's right.
And the second one was in...
About 6 years ago we were here and it was in the winter and we did a show here. It's cold.
Yeah. So, I will start with anecdote which happened to me and considers Cherry Poppin' Daddies. About 15 years ago, I was in New York sitting with my friends in a diner having breakfast. And I don't remember what we were talking about, but I know I mentioned Cherry Poppin' Daddies and caused utter shock. So I didn't know what Cherry Poppin' Daddies mean at the time. That's why my friends, like American friends and some people around who were sitting and heard the name, were like, what? What are you saying in public? So did you, I don't know what Cherry Poppin' Daddy means. So did you ever have problems because of the name?
Yes, I mean, we, first of all, I'm 50 years old, and so I grew up in this, you know, when I was in high school, it was the late 70s, so the Sex Pistols and punk rock, and then when I came of age, it was the punk rock, the West Coast hardcore time, so that was kind of what I was interested in, and, you know, I was interested in Malcolm McLaren and, you know, kind of those kind of subversive marketing techniques. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we wanted to have a name that used our swing roots and our punk rock mentality plus our swing roots. So we wanted to kind of be a clash, you know, the Clash or something, mm-hmm. except swing music. That's what mm-hmm. we wanted to be originally. So, you know, we thought of a name that would have a swing kind of feel to it, but would have this kind of undercurrent of, mm-hmm. you know, like the Sex Pistols. The name Sex Pistols was very controversial
yes.
at the time. It was sort of like that. And when we came out, I guess we didn't expect people to... We didn't expect to be, you know, considered outside of our scene, mm-hmm. you know, like the punk rock and scene. You know, we didn't really think that normal people would like our music, you know. So, when we first started, especially in the town we came from, which is a college town, there was lots of protests and candlelight vigils in front of our shows and things like that, which is sort of what we wanted in a way. So we didn't mind it really that much.
That probably helped with other people coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people who, you know, I mean, it just gave certain people a soapbox. I don't know if that translates to stand on and, you know, rail against us, you know, for their own agendas. Mm-hmm. But the name was just the daddy. It's our daddy-o. Daddies is not exactly fathers. That's not what it means. You
yeah.
know what I mean? So, but you could take it that way, and of course people do, and that's why the people that you were talking to were shocked because they were taking it that way and not
the
wrong way. But people take it the wrong way on purpose,
yeah.
so that for their own agenda, you know.
So at the beginning, you started your band with the bass player and the trumpet player?
Yeah, the two original guys are the bass player and the trumpet player
but
myself.
But before Cherry Poppin' Daddies, you had punk band.
That's right, yeah. The bass player and I started playing
together.
This
was together. Straight punk band or?
No, not
really. It was already swing?
No. you know, sort of, we started out liking Joy Division and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And
very
dark kind of stuff. And then we went to a psychedelic kind of phase. There was the thing called the Paisley Underground. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was the Green on Red and Rain Parade and bands like that. We were into that. And then after we got tired of seeing people sit on the, you know, our music was ethereal and people would sit on the watch us. And we didn't like that. We wanted people to move. And so, but we didn't want to be punk rock because everyone did the same thing. It was boring musically. So I kind of came up with the idea, why don't we do this fusion of punk rock energy with swing music, you know?
So how did people accept from the beginning you mixing punk rock and swing? Did somebody say it doesn't fit together
no,
or something?
Never.
No,
never. People, it was funny because that's what we expected to happen. We expected people to have like one or two shows and people go, whatever, this is, what are you doing? But like from the very first show, people went, wow, this music is terrific, you know? Because it's not punk rock, you know, the music swings. We didn't go play straight punk rock with swing over it, you know? We swung the music, you know,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you feel it in your body, you know? And just that the music, that what we sing about, you know, like drunk daddy, child abuse and, you know, violence and loneliness and alienation is a little different than what people imagine swing music would be.
It's a little bit contradictional.
I mean, it isn't actually, but it's what people think. The way that history has been written makes you think that it's contradictory, but it isn't, because a lot of swing music was you know, that was a very dark time, a lot of it from... Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, and that's what I also, in the name Cherry Poppin' Daddies, a lot of early, what we call race music in the early days of swing music was coded language. You know, you think they're talking about one thing, but they're not talking about that. You know, like,
yeah.
you think they're talking about, you know, something cute and fluffy, but it's like interracial marriage or something like that. You know, there's a lot of, you know, the races.
In between lines.
Yeah, it was before civil rights in the United States, so a lot of the music was black. And so they had to speak to their audience through the white audience. And so a lot of things they were saying were not exactly what the white audience thought they were saying, you know, but they were telegraphing it to their audience, you know. And so there was a lot more drug references and, you know, sex and all the stuff that's in there. But so really the Daddies lyrics are not that different from a lot of the swing era. You know, depends on what you think about. If you think about the 50s, yes, it's different than the 50s, but it's not different than the 40s or 30s, you know, or the 20s.
How did you, in the beginning, how was your start? Like, was it hard to start or with the band or no?
No, I mean, we just started. I mean, it was just kind of, you know, it was an idea. It was a, like an art idea. Let's do this thing and we're going to do it. And we got on a bill with a bunch of rock bands and played our songs, you know, so.
So it wasn't hard to get concerts?
Well, we come from a small town, so, you know, there was, not really. We got one concert and it was so, you know, well attended and so successful. And then the media, like I was talking about, you know, there was a lot of controversy over us. So everyone was talking about us for a long time because they, you know, debating whether we were, you know, bad people or, mm-hmm. you know, whether we should be banned from this club, that club. We couldn't be under Cherry Pop and Daddy's for a long time in our town. And then so we ended up playing in Portland, which is pretty close. Mm-hmm. We ended up playing at a place called Satyricon, which is a very famous punk rock club in Portland. You know, and then we just build it out from there. So we kind of had to avoid our hometown after, you know, at the beginning. And then we were playing San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, and then across the country, you know.
Did you have a lot of different genres in mm-hmm. your music? Did anybody, like, ever say that it's too eclectic, that it doesn't fit together?
Yeah.
That people can't, like, a lot of people, it's very narrow, centered to music.
Right. Yeah, yes, they do say that. And I personally think that that has to do with, I think that's totally wrong. And I think that has to do with capitalism. I think, you know, capitalism wants you to focus, keeps you in little barrier. Uh-huh. Yeah, you need to be in your little space. And if you use, like, my whole thing about making music is use the genre to help you say what you're saying in the song. You know, if I'm writing a song about, you know, I don't know, like, take something like Drunk Daddy. It's a song about child abuse, mm-hmm. right? You know, why use swing music in something like that? Well, because it adds more power to it. Because if you used a different kind of genre, like if it was metal or whatever, you'd think, okay, this is, I get that. But it's more powerful if in the middle of this, you know, very jazzy thing, you start to realize what's going on in the story. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's more shocking, you know what I mean? And, you know, so you can use genre in the same way. Some, like, light genre mm-hmm. against a heavy topic can be more powerful. And so, you know, I always think of, you know, the genre I'm going to work in with the song. And I don't worry about putting a bunch of genres of songs on an album together because I'm not trying to sell myself like a traditional band would try to sell themselves, you know. The Daddies were always in it for the art part of it. We really weren't in it for, we accidentally became a big band, but we really, from the beginning, were kind of a, you know, art collective, you know what I mean, more. So, you know, but the idea that you shouldn't have a bunch of genres, or that you can't have a bunch of genres on a CD is silly only if you're thinking that you're trying to, you know, promote yourself as a thing, you know.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at it as art, I think it's very, very relevant and interesting, you know. Some of my favorite, like you take Godard, a Godard film, the beginning of a certain, Pierrot Le Fou starts out and it's a road movie, right? For the first 15 minutes, all of a sudden in the middle of the movie, they break out singing. All of a sudden it's a musical, you know. And then it changes and it's like Dr. Doolittle after. I mean, the movie changes genres in the middle mm-hmm. of the movie. And it's, you know, it keeps you, it keeps you on your toes and it makes you think about what is this person trying to say with this whole movie?
But
this
a lot
must
of
fit
people
together.
Can't cope with this changing.
Why the hell with them? You know, they're you know what? They can't cope with it because they're looking for something. They're looking to buy a lifestyle. And if you're looking to buy a lifestyle, you're not living, you know, you're looking to something to fill you as opposed to come out. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at something that is difficult, you have to force yourself into it to try and figure out what this thing is. And then the creative act's coming from you, you know? And that's why I think it's better. I think it's bullshit that people, you know, want to buy music so they can put on the clothes of the lifestyle, you know? We're not about that.
did like record label ever tried you to put into one lane, or just they let you do what you want?
They pretty much let us do what we, well, you know, we were only on a record label for a two, that we were on a record label because our record started selling, and record label went, oh, we better grab these guys, you know. Mm-hmm. But they had no, they didn't know what to do with us because they no, there was no precedent for us before. So they pretty much, and we were lived in Oregon, so they just said, go ahead and make a record. We don't know what to do with you. So we just made our record. So we didn't have much, many people telling us what to do, you know.
But if the song is like written in a swing mood, do you think that people who listen to it, they hear the lyric, the message, or they hear the music first?
I think they can do either. And that's the nice thing about it. You can enter in any way you want, you know. We don't want to push people away, you know. If a person wants to listen to Drunk Daddy and mm-hmm. just dance to it and not think about the fact that it's talking about something, or, you know, or if they just wanted to, and some of our songs are pretty, you know, just songs where you can dance to them and you don't have to think. But most of them have an underlying, you know, you can play them 5, 6, 7 times to try and figure out what I'm talking about, you know. Mm-hmm. But there is something there. It's never just words, you know. It's I labor over the story and the words and how to say it. And I take away stuff sometimes where, you know, so that people, it, to make it too easy, mm-hmm. you know, to know what I'm talking about. Or I wait, I delay what I'm talking about. And to, so it's a poetry. And then in about 3/4 of the way through the song, you start to get rooted in it and you start to understand what I'm talking about. Just, you know, to give the person a chance to kind of try and enter in if they want to.
So the band is developing all the time musically. Is this spontaneous or it's connected to what kind of music you are listening at the time, what influences you most at the time?
Yeah, I'd say it, you know, sometimes it's ideas. It's just the idea, you know, if I'm doing something else and I don't have an idea, then I don't write, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like the last White Teeth Black Thoughts that I brought in here to the radio station came about because after 2008, when the financial crisis happened in the United States, there was a big changes in a lot of the small towns, not in the big cities, but in the small, you know, towns in the United States. You know, it was big, very poor, people lost money. And, you know, it started looking like, you know, like it reminded me of the 30s, you know, like the Brother Can You Spare a Dime and all this kind of Depression era stuff. So I started thinking Depression era, you know, I started just picturing different stories that were kind of like that. And I thought, oh, this would be a good, why don't I make a swing record, because that would tie it together in a way. And I, so, you know, I guess I write by the idea first. So I was thinking, this is, you know, this is the second depression, you know, and this is kind of like Obama era, and the, you know, we're trying to work our way out of this. Obama is Roosevelt and blah, 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 you know, this kind of thing. And I started trying to figure out songs that would work together in that way.
So do you consider yourself like a political band?
I try, you know, yes.
Yes?
But not overtly political. I mean, I guess I you can sort of see where I'm coming from, but I try to not make it, I don't write songs political.
You don't want to push this?
I want to write story songs. Mm-hmm. I want a song about a person. You know, like on the record, there's a song called Concrete Man Blues, and it's about a family who has trouble financially, right? So it's not political, but it's the effects that it's had on this family, you know what I mean? I'm not saying anything about how it happened or why it happened or who's to blame or whatever. It's more that it's happened to them, and there's, you know, the context. You can figure out the context, you know.
So which aspect of your music is most accepted with audiences?
It depends, really. It depends on where you are, you know, it depends on who, the type of person. I'd say probably this, we're known for being a swing band, you know, so that's probably it. I mean, we sold like 2.5 million records of Zoot Suit Riot, you know, so that's a lot of people knowing you for swing music, so.
Yeah. But at the concert, you don't play only swing, you play a little bit of everything.
This record, because it's a swing record, mm-hmm. this is pretty much a swing tour mm-hmm. that we're doing. It just depends on the time and where we're at. There's so much material. We have like 8-9 records or something. So.
So how does concert? How are different like playing in United States or Europe? Or I saw you at Warped Tour, mm-hmm. and then I saw you at House of Blues in Florida once, mm-hmm. like 15 years ago with mm-hmm. Ozomatli.
Oh, right.
And it was total different mm-hmm. Experience for me because at House of Blues there was a lot of kids dancing, mm-hmm. and in here at that time Slovenians didn't dance swing yet. It came later.
Right.
Now it's a lot of swing dancers. But is it very different around the world how they?
At this point, you know, like you said, I think it's now there's swing dancers all over the world. You know, at the beginning it wasn't.
It was very popular now.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was the West. Really, when we started out, it was the West Coast, and it was not even all the West Coast. It was Los Angeles and San Francisco, and you know, even in the Northwest where we're from, it really wasn't that big. So we were going down to San Francisco and Los Angeles a lot as far as the swing part of it was concerned. And then when we toured around the United States, there was a lot of ska bands, and because we had horns, we would be put on a bill with ska bands. And so for years we toured with ska bands, so we'd play you know, we play our swing stuff, but we'd also play a few ska tunes, and we became friends with a lot of the ska bands, you know.
So we will listen to ska song now. So Kedeljak.
Okay.
Used to be known like very wild shows with go-go dancers and lots of other stuff. Mm-hmm. How is today?
It's a lot, you know, that stuff. In the very beginning, like I said, we were more like I was very into Zappa and mm-hmm. that kind of, you know, social commentary through the visual side and theatrical side. But now it's pretty. We play the songs and you know not as
and
much
kids
theatrical.
Dance.
Yeah, right.
So you're a sole author of lyrics and music.
Yeah.
So there's no democracy in cherry popping.
No.
That is,
no.
It's
no.
Like soft autocracy.
That's right.
And when you bring the music, do guys accept everything you bring, or
no,
change they, together?
Yeah, like, it depends on the song, but mm-hmm. Often I'll write just about everything, and then like for the horns, it's harder for me to do horns, but I will write like a lead instrument. If it's the trumpet that's the lead line, I'll write that, and then they'll harmonize around that, you know. Or I'll have ideas for two harmonies but not four or something like that, and so we'll harmonize it together, and then I'll go, that's too long, let's cut this piece out or whatever.
But you don't have any formal musical education?
No.
So you learned it all around?
Yeah,
along
I just
the way, or?
I sing it to myself and I hear it, you know.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I can hear it in my head, so.
So your 25th anniversary is this year or last year?
See, because, we started.
Because in the internet sometimes it's like 88, sometimes it's 89.
Well, yeah, our first gig technically was in November 88. So our first gig was like, so 89, we really call it 89. So 89 to whatever it is now, whatever year it is, so almost.
Do you have any plans to do something special for this anniversary?
You know, I don't know. You know, I just got Zoot Suit Riot back from the major label, record label, so I own it now, which is awesome.
Oh, you got the rights back.
Yeah, that's that
you
many years. Well, they see what happened was when they licensed the usually when you're on a major label, they own your record, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't think that we were going to do anything, I don't think. So they ended up licensing our record, and that license ran out. So I own it, which is unprecedented. You know, bands don't get their record back.
So you now you have to publish it again.
Well, yeah, I was thinking maybe I would do a, okay, Zoot Suit Riot was made very cheaply. I mean, Zoot Suit Riot, the song was a first take. I mean, it was, that's why in the middle of the song, at the end of the song, I say, I think I'm ready to sing it now, because I was singing it and the recording engineer stopped. He said, you know what, that sounded pretty good. You should come in here and listen to that. So I went in and we listened to it. And it was like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's move on, you know, mm-hmm. It's done.
Sometimes it's better like this.
Yeah.
It's more genuine.
Well, we said, well, hey, let's leave that in there. Let's leave on the take. You know, I think I'm ready to sing it now because we'll remember that it's the first take. Now there's like sheet music all over the world with I think I'm ready to sing it now on this sheet music. So I think what we'd do is take Zoot Suit Riot and remaster it, make it sound a little better, and you know, like an anniversary.
But don't polish it too much.
No. We wouldn't do that. We want it. It's really very, as far as you know, from big hit record, it's so unpolished. I mean, it was just quick, you know.
Maybe that's why it was so accepted, because
maybe
people felt this sincerity.
I guess, yeah. I mean, or they could call it sincerity, or it could be suckiness too. So,
did you expect that the band will come so far?
No.
At the beginning?
No, definitely not. You know, I couldn't even picture us being accepted by our friends, even, you know, because our friends were all in punk rock bands and things with guitars and stuff, and horns was very, very reactionary,
yeah,
you know, to them.
Yeah,
they didn't like horns, you know. So, no, I couldn't picture being big. I mean, at the time, people didn't even know I remember at the beginning parts of our career, people would say, what do you call this kind of music you're playing? I'm, you know, because swing had been gone for that long that no one even thought about it as a, you know, thing to play.
How did you come to this mixture anyway? Like you said, you were in hardcore,
yeah.
Into hardcore, and these two are very...
Yeah, they're separate. Yeah, what happened really was that my mom sent me a birthday present of the Smithsonian collection of jazz, and mm-hmm. it was a six cassette, jazz compilation, and I had just moved out, I was 16 or something, and I just moved out of the house, and she sent it to me for my birthday, and I didn't listen to it because I wasn't into that music, you know. So it's selected cuts, like, you know, everything from Louis Armstrong to Ornette Coleman, I mean, mm-hmm. just to free jazz, you know. So, and it goes through the history. But one day I got done, tired of listening to all my records, and I, for some reason, I put it on, you know, and I put it on from the first track to the end. I mean, it was all six cassettes. I just was spellbound. I could not believe it. I mean, I got it immediately. I got it. Something clicked in it with me, and I kind of got the idea all at once. I thought, hey, if I can, because I love the harmonics of the music. The harmonics was dissonant and dark and beautiful and haunting, and I thought, wow, if I can merge that with the energy that I feel, you know, I wonder how that would work, you know. So it all kind of came together like that.
And you asked the bass player, and he said
actually,
yes.
No. He actually, because I wanted originally to have a stand-up bass player, and I had played with Dan in other bands, and he didn't play a stand-up bass. So I tried to get a stand-up bass player, and I had other friends. It was going to be a different band, and he wasn't mm-hmm. going to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
And but finally, you know, he said, yeah, I'll do it. I'll play. I'll learn to play parts. And it wasn't all, you know, not all the tunes needed stand-up bass. We had a funky side to us too. You know, there was funk and punk and stuff like that. So, you know, we started playing, and you know, he
learned through the band.
Yeah, yeah. We all did. You know, we just kind of all put it together. You know, and I had a friend who played alto sax, who was really a big part of it. Him and Dana, the trumpet player, mm-hmm. At the beginning.
So you had a lot of band member changing?
Oh yeah, yeah, because the touring was so hard. And especially for, I joke with horn players. Horn players, a lot of times, the really good ones, they don't want to go on the road. They can't take it. It's not comfortable, and you know, they couldn't.
Spoiled.
Yeah, they're spoiled. They're spoiled. So the guitar players, the drummers, bass players are a little more hardy. But you know, you get to the horn. Well, Dana though has been with us the whole time. He's a different kind of cat. I mean, he's. I don't know. He's tough. He's a tough one. But
only two of you original members.
Yeah, the horn. But he really is a very essential part of the sound. I mean, he plays a lead trumpet too, which is not many trumpet players do. He plays really high, mm-hmm. and you know, so he's crazy. You know, so he's different.
So last year you published White Teeth, Black Thoughts.
That's right.
So this year you have planned for one more. I don't know if it's already released. Rat Pack.
Yeah.
Tribute.
It's been released in the States, but we think we're probably going to release it here.
How did you decide to do that record?
Well, we were in the studio making White Teeth, Black Thoughts, and after that we had some studio time, and we were thinking, you know, we've always done. Back in the old days when we first started out in the punk rock clubs, you know, people used to mosh and jump off, you know, that kind of stuff. And when it got too crazy, we would play a Sinatra song to calm people down and go, you know, to step back and, and do that. So we've always had a couple of those songs in our hip pocket. Mm-hmm. And we just decided, hey, you know what? What if we, you know, it was sort of like, I wonder if we could make our studios like this big, you know? So it's very small. And I wondered if we could make recordings that sounded like a complete orchestra in the space that we had. So it was kind of like a test of the craft, of our recording craft, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was the goal, is to try and write the...
Are you satisfied with it?
Yeah, I think we did pretty good. Yeah, I mean, because we learned that we had to do it live, because the grit and the bigness and the sound of it wouldn't happen any other way. So we had to record the drums and the horns, everybody in the same room, and it had to be, you know, but we did it fairly quickly. But it sounds really good though.
Are you going to play some songs from that record
yeah.
too tonight?
Yeah, we are.
Super.
Yeah.
Do you think you achieved everything you could with Cherry Pop and Daddies, or is there more to come?
Oh, there's
surprises, more development?
Yeah, there's definitely more to come. I mean, to be honest, if there wasn't more to come, I'd just stop, because I have a family, and you know, I like touring, but touring keeps the band together. Really, for me, I'm more of a recording guy. Mm-hmm. So, if I could record and not tour, I would do that. I at this point in my life, I have no interest in doing this too much, you know, but. But I want to do it so much. I have some ideas that I want to do record-wise and recording-wise that I want to do. So I'm going to keep going, because I want to finish this thought off before I'm done.
So we will hear more of Cherry Pop and Daddies.
Yes.
A lot more. Super. So thank you for being with us, and I wish you a really nice concert today.
Thank you.
Torej, to je bil Steve Perry iz Cherry Pop and Daddies. Poslušali bomo še eno pesem iz njihovega lanskega albuma White Teeth, Black Thoughts. Pa pridite danes na koncert, ne? Z njim sem se pa pogovarjala s Kabina. Čau!
Flashing white teeth, and we're thinking black thoughts, and we'd better walk away before we both get caught. A flashing white teeth and thinking black thoughts. her flashing white teeth across a vast floor. That's why I'm wiggling my ring, then it's straight to the elevator door.
Intervju Radija Študent.
Zdaj pa je aparat, sviraj!
Jebem ti sunce japansko!